pop up with great skill from him to wing the Mo Salah. Raheem Sterling, what a finish! What pure class from the Englishman.
Premier Talk, the English Premier League podcast for the fans.
Hello and welcome back to yet another episode of Premier Talk Podcast. This is episode 6. We're going to call this one Manchester Derby, featuring our guest, Peter Fusco. Peter, thanks for joining the show. Glad to have
you. Thanks for having me.
You have another fan perspective. He's a City fan, Daniel. So
yeah, it's not good for me right now. I'm kind of happy it's a City fan this week, especially because, Manchester.
Yeah, you got lucky this week.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, yeah, you got us there. But it's going to be a good one for you guys. Can't wait to get started.
Yeah, I rate the kits to start this one here. Like, you got the Manchester kit there, Daniel. Fusco's got the Man City kit, a little bit of a rivalry here. It's sick. The little kit he's got there with the pink lettering looks dope. I got my Drogba jersey out, my Pogba jersey out in honor of you, Daniel, of course. So, bro, you got the setup today, bro. It's looking nice.
I like it. Let's get kicked off right now with the starting lineup. We're going to start us off with a match day 27 recap.
Then we got the Champions League and Europa League recap discussion.
And then we're going to do a quick little Q&A with Peter Fusco. We're going to ask you, Peter, a little bit of questions about Manchester City and all that entails.
All right, Dino, if you want to get us started here with the match day 27 recap, this was on Saturday, March the 6th. Got a bunch of games here.
We had 4 games on Saturday. We got our first one was Burnley versus Arsenal. This one ended in a 1-1 draw. We got Aubameyang scoring in the 6th minute, and he continues his good form. And then we got Chris Wood scoring in the 39th minute to tie this game up for Burnley, and that's how it ended. If you're Arsenal, this is upsetting. If you're Burnley, this is a great tie for you.
Terrible result again for Arsenal. You see, failing to get the goals going, right? They have numerous guys up front. Like we mentioned this time and time again, Daniel, I feel sorry like for Pock and those guys because they're such devoted Arsenal fans, but they spent so much money up top and still they can't get it done. Abba gets on the score sheet. He seems like to be the only guy that exists up there in their attack. Peter, I want to get your take on this. What do you think about Arsenal in the current state that they're having? Because, you know, they bring over a City connection there with Mikel Arteta. So,
yeah, I think the move with Arteta is good. I do think that I feel like the system needs to mold. And I feel like Arteta still has to find his place in that team with those players that he's given, right? So I do think that Arsenal will eventually get up to their spot, how they've claimed over the years, but it might just take a little bit more time than usual.
I think it's a pretty good take, actually. I know me and Andrew like to kind of go nuts on Arsenal when.
Yeah, it's easy to pick on the big teams that aren't doing so well, right? Mm-hmm. But
very true.
Hopefully they come back to form. Love to see them back at the top.
We're going to move on here to the Sheffield versus Southampton game. This one ended with Southampton coming out on top 2-0. We got James Ward-Prowse. He scored from the penalty spot in the 32nd minute. And then Che Adams. I don't know if you two saw this goal. It was an absolute screamer from outside the box on the half volley. He got this one in the 49th minute. And after those 2 goals from Southampton, it was too much for Sheffield to come back from. And they ended up winning this one 2-0.
Bro, you know who Che Adams reminds me of? Like, he reminds me of vintage Troy Deeney. Like, they got that similar style where they're, like, a hold-up striker. And then, like, they score, like out of nowhere. Like, everyone likes to banter on them because they're, like, these guys, whatever. Like, they're at that same level, more or less. But these guys score bangers. Like, Che Adams knows how to finish his chances. And then, I mentioned in last episode with, the underrated segment that we did at the end answering that question. James Ward-Prowse, man, he's so underrated. He could easily be on any of the top 6 teams. Personally, I would love to see him on a team like Leicester. He would be like a sick link up in the midfield with like a James Maddison. Like, they're two creative, like playmaking type players, and I think they'd be amazing together. I think he's really solidified himself as a leader in the Southampton team, but I would love to see him succeed and do well elsewhere. I think he could easily be on like a Tottenham, a Leicester, any of those big 6 teams for sure.
I'm going to ask Peter first. James Ward-Prowse, how do you feel about it? I'll answer after I have a little take on this one.
I think he's probably one of England's most solid all-around midfielders. I do think he's very underrated just because of the team he plays for. As Melo said, Leicester, I feel like, would be one of the greatest fits. It would not only help him out, but it would help Leicester City out. And I do think they should give him a chance. I don't know if he's on the lineup in the Euro Cup, but I do think he's one of the names that could be on that list.
I hope they do, being honest with you. I think he's great. He's done so well for the Southampton side. I don't understand how like, I know England's team is stacked. Like, that team is phenomenal on paper. They have literally defenders, midfielders, attackers. They have the whole bench. It's basically like City playing internationally. But I think he deserves this spot. I think he's been fantastic this year. He's been fantastic over the last couple of years, and he's pretty underappreciated in my opinion.
Okay, so I want to ask you guys here then. There's one spot left in the midfield roster for this England national team come, you know, Euro Cup. Who'd you take? You taking a Foden or are you taking James Ward-Prowse?
Oh. I'm taking okay, Peter, I'll let you answer first. Oh,
geez. It's Foden. I think Foden's, especially in the past few months, January, February in particular, he's been probably one of our strongest midfielders. Just because of course De Bruyne is coming off an injury, and we're trying to find more attackers in that midfielder lineup, and Phil Foden has been proven to play either left mid, right wing, mid, cam, on the wing, center mid. He's proven to play anywhere and succeed at every position. Ward-Prowse, again, I haven't really watched a whole lot. I did watch the Southampton game, but like, honestly, it could go either way, but obviously the City bias, you're just going to point towards Foden.
I'm not City biased, and I still got to go Foden with this one. Like, oh, that's a really good question, though, because both of them, I think, have what it takes to make their national team. But Foden's been great. He's young. I don't know how old. I think, is Ward-Prowse in his late 20s?
I think he's 26 or 27, to be honest with you, yeah.
Yeah, so he's still at a pretty good age. I think Foden, you know, being a youngster, he plays on Manchester City, which obviously gives him, like, that title. But he's been, just personally, he's been fantastic all season, and he probably does deserve the spot just ever so slightly over Ward-Prowse does.
I think sorry, Melo, go ahead.
No, go for it, man. Go for it.
I was just going to say, I think I see an England system where both of them play and you get rid of like a Dele Alli or something like that from Tottenham, who's been out of form recently.
Yeah, I think that's a great point you mentioned there with Dele Alli. He's really out of favor since, you know, he's tapered off in terms of his form. I was just going to mention briefly, the difference between like a James Ward-Prowse and a Foden is you're getting that experience with James Ward-Prowse. You're getting that sense of like leadership just by example. And the one key difference there, I think, too, is Foden's more electric the way he plays. He's more electric going forward, more shifty going forward. And then if you were to take a James Ward-Prowse, you'd obviously get that like phenomenal set piece ability that he has from the corner or from a free kick. So that would definitely be a huge advantage to bring a player like that into a squad come Euro 2021 or Euro 2020.
We're going to move on to the next game here. We've got Aston Villa and Wolves. This was just a nil-nil draw between the two. There was no goals in this one. Not much to talk about. Both teams played well, just no big goal-scoring opportunities throughout. The last game on Saturday, March 6th, was Brighton versus Leicester City. Brighton started off strong in this one with Lallana scoring in the 10th minute, but Leicester did battle back with goals from Iheanacho and in the 62nd. Iheanacho scored in the 62nd, and Amardi in the 87th. And that goal in the 87th gained them the 3 points over Brighton, which I think they deserved. And I think it was also much needed for Leicester, as they've been not picking up as many points as I think they would have liked to. They've been drawing and losing lately a little bit more than they have throughout this year because of, obviously, injuries are starting to play a factor, fatigueness. You're about halfway through the year. It was a big one for Leicester.
Yeah, this is a huge win for Leicester. 2-1 against Brighton Hove Albion. It's no easy feat, really, because even though Brighton Hove Albion is one of those lower table teams, they're a very hard opponent. They're very difficult to break down. Sometimes when they play that three back with the two fullbacks, whether it's, you know, Tariq Lamptey on any given day, then they also have the highly rated Ben White. It's not easy to break down that defense, right? So a huge win for Leicester, especially with some, you know, some players that they usually play with day in, day out, where we're not featured in the starting 11. So huge win for them. And I think an underrated win for them as well.
Peter, do you have anything to add on this one? No,
I'm just glad Iheanacho's getting on the score sheet. The ex-City man. Proving his form. No, it's good because, like, the way we could talk about this later, but the way City plays their strikers is it's just you play one striker forever until they get injured and then you switch them out. That's probably one of the biggest problems I see with City. And to see him actually get on the score sheet scoring a goal is really good. Leicester also getting a win against Brighton, as you guys were saying before, that all the teams on the back end have that very defensive first gameplay, and it's very hard to break down and actually steal points away.
Daniel, I don't know if you want to kick off yet. Sunday? Sorry to cut you off. Yeah, Sunday.
Okay. We're going to move to Sunday. There was another four games in this one. It started off, we got the morning starting off with West Brom versus Newcastle. Just like the Aston Villa Wolves game, it ended 0-0. There was no goals in this one. Not much to talk about. The second game of the day was Liverpool versus Fulham. And this was an absolute stunner from Fulham as they scored one goal coming from Mario Lemina in the 45th. And this stole 3 points from Liverpool. It gave Liverpool their sixth straight home league loss this year in a row. And it's the first time in history that they've, the first time in their history that they've ever lost six straight league home games, which was absolutely madness. Everybody on social media was going crazy because Fulham sitting in I believe 19th currently, like they're expected to get relegated this year. And they go to Liverpool, who obviously is dealing with injuries like Leicester, but you know, Liverpool still has guys like Mane and Salah up top, and you're spending your defensive core to hold on to Fulham, but they just couldn't. And it showed because they dropped their 3 points.
Daniel, this is shocking, really, to see Liverpool lose, drop points against Fulham. Relegation side is just, and just in the fashion that they did it too, they look like dead the whole game pretty much. There's no real heart or passion in this team right now. Fusco, I just want to ask you, do you think there's a point where Klopp is on the hot seat, or do you think he's still untouchable from all the, you know, work he's done? Because he's obviously brought them their first title in so many years, and then obviously the UCL win too. So
yeah, so I think as it stands right now, they're probably like, if I was Liverpool, I'd probably keep Klopp, and I would probably ask him what should we change, whose players should we get rid of or whatever. They've also been absolutely destroyed with injuries, right, especially in their defensive lineup, having to play likes of Fabinho and Henderson. We don't normally play those positions in the center back role, right? It is very disappointing to see a team like Fulham actually take 3 points away from a team like Liverpool, who last season have won the league. And you never really see a team that the year before won the league drop so many points the season after. It's usually they float around either second, third, or even go back to back, right? It's very disappointing to see.
I know Gerrard was asked after, I don't know if it was a press conference or fans were getting to him on Twitter or social media, but fans were basically saying that they want him in at Liverpool, being a Liverpool legend. They felt that he deserves a spot after coming off an incredible season with Rangers. He responded back to that saying that he thinks Klopp is one of the best managers in the world, and there is no way that he'd replace him right now because Klopp has done too much for this team for him to come in and take what he's done. He said it is, though, his dream to come to Liverpool and manage the team that he played for. And I think it will happen eventually, but I don't think right now is the time to move on from Klopp. I think he's done too much for a club that with a bunch of injuries, and now you're starting to drop some points against lower side teams. I don't think it's enough for him to be sacked.
Yeah, Daniel, I'm going to have to agree with you, because at the end of the day, he's done so much for the club. He's done so much for the club. He really revolutionized the game there, because they were in a terrible, like, low point for many years. They weren't even a title contender for a lot of time. So for him to come and, you know, change the team up, bring in certain players like the Manes, like the Salahs, and really give them a chance to flourish in his system, you know, that's all credit goes to him. And at the end of the day, it's not his fault that his two key center backs and even his third center back, at what they're all out, right? So it's very hard to deal with that and try to bring in these other guys to come into your system and play in that back line. And then you pair them up with the center defending midfielder, whether it's Henderson or it's a Fabinho, it's extremely difficult. I honestly don't think that Quebec transfer has worked out at all. It's been terrible, terrible signing. He looks lost on the field there with whoever he's playing with on any given day. I don't blame him. It's the hard situation to come into. There's a lot of pressure on the kid. Obviously, he was playing on a Schalke team that was, you know, they're bound to go down to the second division and to go to the second division of the Bundesliga. So it's just, they're in shambles right now, and it's definitely tough times for Liverpool fans. And it's almost like the tables have turned this year, and Everton's the better team in Liverpool.
Mm-hmm. We're going to move on to, I think, the main talking point of this episode, which is the Manchester Derby. I know I'm excited for this one. Peter might not be as excited as I am.
Daniel, I'm going to have to rip you for one of your comments, because I go on social media right after the game, and this guy, you have the nerve. You have the nerve, Daniel, to post Manchester is red, bro.
Manchester is red, baby.
Get out of here. They won the game. 2-0 Good results. Amazing result. But it's too little too late because this Manchester City team is too good. They're too far ahead. I think they're 11 points ahead right now on the table, which is which is hard to overcome. So, you know, take it with a little grain of salt here, Daniel, because you got the 3 points on the day, but look, you're still way down the mountain to reach the top. So
Come back down to earth,
Daniel. That's all I
just think that, you know, you gotta go nuts on social media when you can. Manchester was red for the day. I know they might have won the battle, but not the war. But I'll take a dub over City any day of the week. You can come up to me and like, how would you
Man U doesn't get the wins as often as they should. So
any small
win is it's like the World Cup final for these Man U fans.
Okay, we're gonna move to this one. We got so United won this one 2-0 over City. We got Bruno Fernandes scored from the penalty spot in the second minute after Jesus made, I think it was a not needed challenge on Martial in the first minute. I know Peter does not sound very happy about that one. And then we got Luke Shaw scoring in the 50th minute. I think it was a nice finish from him. It went through, I believe it was Ruben Diaz's legs and into the far right corner. No chance for Ederson there.
Yep.
And City did try to battle back. They pressed as hard as they could the whole second half after the goal from Shaw, and they couldn't get one because you got the fridge, Harry Maguire, standing in their way. Why not?
Daniel, what I will say about this game though is Luke Shaw. You got to give him credit. You know, hats off to Luke Shaw because he's been impressive. And I will mention this again because he really does deserve the credit. Years back, he got his leg. It was a terrible injury. I already mentioned this on a previous episode, but I want to talk about it with Fusco. Like, it's incredible to see him bounce back because not many players would be able to bounce back the way he has. And everyone always, you know, likes to get on him and say that he's not good enough for Man United, but he's been like, honestly, one of their top two players behind Bruno Fernandes. So hats go off to the man. And he definitely deserves the nod this year to go to be in that Euro Cup squad for sure.
Peter, I couldn't agree more. I actually like, as much as I like to dog on Manchester United, I think Luke Shaw's probably been, besides Bruno Fernandes, one of the most key players in that team, even though being a left back and whatnot, I do think he's one of the key players. And maybe it's because Ole Gunnar signing Alex Telles in the summer maybe lit a flame under his ass, there's the saying goes, and just like reignited his spirits to play and his fight to get in that starting 11. But in my opinion, I think he's either the best left back in the Premier League or one of the best left backs. Like, he's been phenomenal for Manchester United, and it showed against City.
Being honest with you, I don't think City had a bad game. I think Jesus, obviously, like, that was just like a very poor, like, you don't need to make that challenge. You're making, like, I know there was a photo that was taken. It was actually a pretty cool looking photo. They were making, somebody commented saying that they were making Martial look like prime Maradona because Martial was literally sitting in between like six City guys, like literally wrapped around them. And Jesus from behind felt the need to tackle him instead of just letting him walk into a center back or a defender who should be putting in a tackle instead of a striker trying to put that tackle in.
What I will say about the City game, another comment I have to make is just your run's going to come to an end. It's normal. They were on an absolutely phenomenal run. It was a 22 match win streak around
21.
There.
21. Yeah.
21. 21. So that's an incredible run. You have to like really, you know, relish that accomplishment. That's a huge accomplishment to really achieve for any team in any league, really. And for them to do that over that many games and be that consistent is incredible. It's really, really incredible. And it's going to come to an end eventually, right? And at the end of the day, you know, it's a little bittersweet for it to come, you know, against your City rival there. But maybe losing now isn't the best, isn't the worst thing because they're going to go play in the Champions League. So maybe it's better you lose now and then you continue that form up again once you're in those games that it really matters and you can't lose at all. So.
Mm-hmm.
A very good way to spin losing a game. But I think that City game comes down to the Jesus penalty. And as Daniel was saying before about having five or six Manchester City players around Martial and Jesus being the one to tackle him, who doesn't have the best experience on the defensive half of the field, right? Man, like at that point, like I understand he was coming back from attempting to intercept the ball a couple times, but at that point you just leave it to the center backs and then that's on them, right? But Yeah, it was just disappointing to see the first goal. And then I pretty much knew from then the way City was playing. They were pressing the whole time, but they just felt a little flat as sometimes they do. It happened against Lyon last year in Champions League as well. They just felt really flat. And that same form kind of brought out the worst in all the players.
I don't think there is much else to talk about in this one. It was a fantastic game overall. I think
it was good to watch. On the edge of my seat.
Yeah, it was definitely a game where you were anticipating, like I was anticipating goals at the end, especially coming from City. They were pressing so high, and I think they did have a couple of quality chances that weren't converted. But it was a great game to watch. I think it was fantastic.
Daniel, the next one was a good one too. It was a derby.
It was
London derby between Tottenham and Crystal Palace. 4-1 scoreline for the Spurs. Absolutely massive win. I don't care. Any win for Spurs is a massive one. They just need to continue getting 3 points week in, week out, because, you know, consistency has been their worst problem this year, I feel. So, you know, Bale scored twice, got a brace. I'm so happy to see Bale. Me and Daniel are huge fans of Bale. We really love him.
Yeah.
Ever since his Real Madrid days, of course, and the OG days when he was like absolutely scoring rockets every game for Spurs.
Well, I didn't like when he was like destroying Barcelona at the same time, but like when he come back to the Premier League. I like to see him succeed. Why not?
And then we had also in this game, we had goals from Christian Benteke. And then Kane also scored two other goals for the Spurs there. So important for Kane to get back on the score sheet. You know, hasn't been playing every single game due to the injuries. So it's nice to see him get back into the rhythm and grab a pair here.
Mm-hmm. If you're Tottenham, I think this is exactly what you love to see. You got Bale with two, Kane with two. You got an assist from Son. I think, I don't know if Son got two assists or one assist. You still got him on the goal sheet as well, though. You got, I think, your three quote-unquote stars of the team. Son, Bale, and Kane getting on the score sheet. What else can you want from Tottenham?
It's good to see back in form. I honestly, the way it looks to me is almost like how Brazil ended up losing Neymar in the World Cup, being Kane, being that Neymar, that main role, right? So as soon as Kane got injured, it's almost like Tottenham didn't know what to do first. Mm-hmm. Who do we put in there? What do we do? What's the system change? All that stuff, right? And it really showed with their games later on, actually dropping points to numerous teams without Harry Kane. And as mm-hmm. soon as Harry Kane comes back, it shows. 4-1 scoreline against Tottenham. Obviously, you had that little spat with Mourinho and Gareth Bale. I don't know if you guys saw that. And maybe mm-hmm. that also just told Gareth Bale to get out of his own head and start playing the real game, right?
Mm-hmm. I know we had discussed too, like you said, Kane got injured and this Tottenham team looks so lost. I know him and Son play off each other so well. When it's like detaching a link from your team's going to falter, and that's exactly what it did. But if he can get back in form again with those three players playing off each other, they're going to be scoring lots of goals this year. And that's, if you're fans of the beautiful game, that's exactly what you want to see. So we're going to move on here to Monday, March 8th. There was two games on Monday. The first one was Chelsea versus Everton. This one ended in a 2-0 win for Chelsea. Ben Godfrey scored an own goal in the 31st minute to put Chelsea up 1-0. And then Jorginho added to the lead in the 65th minute from the penalty spot, leaving Chelsea to win this one 2-0. It was a pretty good game. Not Everton had their chances, couldn't finish. Chelsea finished. I know, obviously, an own goal and a penalty.
It's Tuchel time. That's really what it is. Like he's turned this team around. I'll mention it once again because it comes down to, at the end of the day, to his tactics. And these games are very, very, very difficult. I can't stress that enough. Everton have been phenomenal this season. They just upset Liverpool a couple weeks ago. They've been in a good run of form. Richarlison has been very hot. And to keep a clean sheet against a team like Everton when they're firing on all cylinders in the attack, it's huge, 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 huge. So amazing result for Chelsea. They stay in that top three. So huge result for them.
We're going to move on to West Ham versus Leeds. West Ham won this one 2-0. We got a goal coming from Jay Lings, where his penalty got saved in the 21st and he scored the rebound. And then 7 minutes later, the center back of West Ham, Craig Dawson, he scored to make it 2-0. And that's
Jay
how the
Lings,
game ended.
Baby. Jay Lings, baby.
I'm happy for him, to be honest with you. I think he's been in great form lately, and this West Ham team has given his confidence back, and he's proving that he can still play at a top level in the Prem.
Fusco, I want to ask you, do you think Jay Ling deserves a nod back at Manchester United? Do you think he deserves a spot next year, or do you think it's the relationship's tarnished to the point where, like, he's gone, like, he's going to leave?
I think in the terms of Jesse Lingard, I don't think a move back to Man U is good for him. I really don't. Not that he was bad at Man U. He had his first few years were absolutely phenomenal, right? And then it started to show a little bit more when you had Bruno Fernandes coming in, big signing from Manchester United as well. But it really started to show that he was on the back burner. Of course, during the pandemic at the beginning of last year, his form started to falter a significant amount compared to the seasons before. But you know what? It'd be really bad if we saw him go back. Staying at West Ham, even finding, like, as we said with Ward Prowse, Leicester City, maybe even like a bigger team. You could even say Everton, some other teams, maybe even move Germany to Spain, anywhere. I feel like most teams would be happy to have him for what he can offer.
Mm-hmm. You know, I agree with that. I don't think United's the play for him anymore. I think that United's team has advanced, and he sat down, and maybe his relationship is tarnished a little bit, like Melo said. I agree with you. I think Everton, when you said Everton, I was like, wow, it's actually not a bad idea. I think Everton would be a good fit for him. I know their midfield is pretty good with center attacking mids. You got James, who sometimes played on the wing. You got Sigurdsson. I think it'd be good to have him. I think that's not a bad idea.
Just to wrap this up, I think that's all we have, all the time we have for today in this episode 6. Peter, thanks for coming on once again. We love having people from the community come on and give their two cents about the Premier League and honestly bring their perspective here. So we thank you a lot for coming on.
Thanks for having me. It was a great time. I really enjoyed myself talking about how bad Manchester United is.
I have to include that right at the end.
And I just want to shout out Barbuda here. The man looks fresh. He looked like Jimmy Neutron the last couple episodes. This guy finally got a haircut. You know, I just want to give, you know, a credit to him because he got a haircut finally. So shout out to Barbudo, eh?
You know how lockdown is. You gotta do what you gotta
I
do.
I saw
you
him like last weekend, man. And I told him, you don't need a haircut. You need some lawn care treatment for that top, man. You need a lawnmower or a weed whacker or something, man.
Yeah. For those of you watching on YouTube, you guys will see. Those of you listening on Spotify, Apple Music, Google Podcasts, head over to YouTube.
Go on YouTube and see the photo.
Just go on Google Images and search up shrubs, and that's what his head looked like, a shrub. So that about wraps up episode 6. It was a great episode. Another one in the books. We got many more coming. Honestly, follow us on Instagram at Premier Talk Podcast. Keep the conversation going. We're going to pose more fan questions. And that's about it, Daniel. That's about it.
Hey, guys. Appreciate you, all you guys listening. Peter, I appreciate you coming on. And thank you, everyone.
See you guys next time. Peace out.
See you later.
Peace.